Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi there, welcome along to this special episode of the High Performance Podcast with myself, Jake Humphrey, and Professor Damien Hughes. First of all, we just want to say what a remarkable response we've had to the first series, not just in the UK, where we both live, but also around the world. So thank you to all of you. Whatever country you're in, whichever episode you've listened to, thank you for making the first series bigger than we ever imagined. I also want to say a big thanks to Lotus Cars. They agreed to come on board as the sponsors for this first series. They've been there every step of the way. They've been really helpful, and we believe they're a genuine high performance brand, and it was great to have them with us. So thank you very much to Lotus as well. And at the end of this podcast, you can always head online and check out lotuscars.com or find them right across social media. Damien's alongside me for this one. Damien, we're not together because of the various COVID-19 restrictions, but it's going to be good, isn't it, just to hear back some of the things that we've recorded over the last few months.
I'm really looking forward to it, Jake. I think it's been a real privilege to be involved in this series. So it's been equally pleasurable just to sit and reflect on the interviews that we've done.
Right, looking forward to this. Let's get into it then, Damien. What's the first clip that you want to discuss and listen to again?
Well, the first clip is one that I think seemed to resonate massively over social media and beyond. It was our interview with Robin van Persie, where he very generously shared some of his own parenting insights into high-performance messages that he gave his 14-year-old son, Shaquille.
So my son plays at Feyenoord. He played against Ajax under 14. He was on the bench. He didn't play. So in the car on the way back, he was like a bit moody, disappointed, complaining a little bit about others, about the coach, etc. And then I said, but Shaquille, I said, you sound like a loser. You know, if you talk like this in a way, you sound like you lost. I said, you are blaming him, you're blaming her, you're blaming this, you're blaming everything. I said, but I don't hear one single thing about yourself. I said, winners, I said, they take control and they blame themselves and they look where they can improve. Yeah. And this is what you should be thinking about. So I didn't tell him what he should think about. You should ask yourself the question, are you a loser or are you a winner? I said, for me, it doesn't matter. I said, because I'm your dad. The only job I have and your mom has is when you're 20, that you're a good boy, that you're ready for life. You know, you can make your mistakes. You can do what you want. I love you for the same amount. It doesn't matter for me if you make it as a football player or not. I said, but you say that this is your passion. So you should take control of your life and stop complaining because it sounds like a loser. I said, then I don't mind. If you want to be a loser, be a loser. I still love you as much. I said, it doesn't matter for me. I said, but if you want to be a winner, take control of your life and stop complaining about others. And then I watched him train the next morning. My wife said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to watch this session. 2 days later, actually, because they played on Saturday and Monday morning. So I'm there sitting, cold, hoodie on. I'm looking and I see this tiger training, running, working. And I was like, ah, okay. Okay. He realized he has to take control of his life. He's 13 now.
Why do you think that that resonated so strongly with people, Damien?
I think that there's an awful lot of people that are parents that are listening to this that can really empathize in terms of trying to motivate teenage kids to engage, to stop blaming others and to actually take accountability. So I think it resonated because a lot of people got a lot of warmth from the fact that, you know, however successful the parents are, they're still trying to deal with some of the same challenges as anybody else. So I think that was true. But I just think that idea of accountability and stop moaning and take accountability for yourself is such a powerful theme across any individual, team, organization, or family.
One of the things that we've tried really hard to do with our kids, and ours are younger than yours, they're only 7 and 4, is not to be one of those helicopter parents, always hovering over your child all the time, you know, giving them that bit of space. And I see all the time parents making sure their child fails at nothing. And obviously all you do then is prepare them for the biggest failure of all when they hit 18 or 19 or 21. And for the first time ever, they go for a job interview and get told, sorry, you haven't got the job. And they cannot cope with it because the one thing they've not been given is that resilience. And I think that if there's one thing that Robin's son will be, is resilient from that kind of parenting, and I think it's perfect.
Yeah, it really taps into it. There's a movement in education at the moment led by the work of a psychologist called Carol Dweck, and it's very much around teaching kids that very thing that you've just described, Jake. It's the idea of developing a growth mindset. Now, a growth mindset teaches kids that struggle makes you smarter. So the harder you work at something, the better you will naturally be. On the flip side of it, a fixed mindset is the idea that you just believe you've got a certain amount of talent and whatever you do, there's not an awful lot you can do to grow and manifest that talent. So what Robin's saying there and the point that you're making is the fact that you've got to let kids struggle, you've got to let them make mistakes, you've got to let them learn, because only through that way do they become smarter and able to be more resilient and adapt to changes.
And it was interesting that lots of the people that we had on the podcast actually spoke about parenting, didn't they? You know, Tom Daly, who is a diver, spoke about parenting. Ant Middleton, who's in the military, spoke about parenting. Rio Ferdinand did it. Sean Dyche did it as well. Dylan Hartley. Let's listen to just a couple of the clips and then we will talk about why every single time someone on the pod spoke about parenting, it kind of hit home with people that were listening.
You know, look, I think we've become a nation of lazy parenting when something won't go right at school and it's come back, where it's not your fault, it's their fault. It's, you know, we don't spend enough time with our children. We don't spend enough time pushing them and forcing them into stuff. You know, I force my children to do stuff whether they like it or not. And I'm only forcing them through love and through personal development. There's nothing malicious in it. There's nothing negative in it. I'm forcing. I know you don't want to do that, son, but you're going to do it. Bosh, you know, whether I push him into climbing a ladder, whether, and then he gets to the top of the ladder, he's like, well, it's not that bad, is it? But if I didn't have forced you to do that, you wouldn't know what you're capable of. And swimming, you know, so my son was like, just pushed him into the shallow end, you know, knowing that my wife's that side, and, you know, and he's like, no, boom, boom. Well, actually, and then I jumped in there and held him in the water. I'm like, it's not that bad, is it, son? I can't get him out of the water now.
I mean, I'm married, I've got a kid, so that takes a lot of that away. Yeah. Like, I can actually, for the first time ever, leave my diving at the pool. Like, I've never been able to do that before. But when you have a kid, you don't have a choice. You can't be thinking about what you're going to be doing tomorrow in the pool. You have to be thinking about what's going to be going on with Robbie today. Like, what is he doing?
It's good for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So that was Ant Middleton and then Tom Daly talking about parenting. Please, if you haven't already, feel free to go back and listen to the rest of the series to see what the other guests had to say about it. And for me, Damien, it was really important that we had these kinds of conversations because right from the very beginning, I didn't want the High Performance Podcast to be about sport. I wanted it to be about life. And I think that was the great thing is that sometimes we sat, for example, with Sean Dyche, the Burnley manager. We didn't talk about football, really, for the entire time we were with him, did we?
No, and I think that surprised him, didn't it? I think at the end of our conversation, he sort of acknowledged that we'd sat for 90 minutes and we hadn't discussed tactics or formations or anything like that. But I think it definitely fits with when we'd spoken before we started the series, I think you wanted to get this idea that these were general rules for life that people could take away and understand. And that phrase you used repeatedly, Jake, that there's no secret to this kind of stuff. It's as applicable to parents as it is to elite sports performers, as it is to people building businesses. The mentality and the principles are consistent.
And do you think high achieving people make better parents, or do they make as many mistakes as you or I make?
I think this was really interesting, wasn't it? That when I was reflecting on this, I think their circle of competence is that they know what they know, but equally they know what they don't know. And it was interesting that in our conversations, I remember Dylan Hartley, for example, asking us for our opinion. So I don't think that they claim to have the answers. I think they're struggling as much as we are.
Okay, here's another life lesson then. Robin Van Persie talking about cutting out friends, again, went global, thousands of views right across the world. But Rio Ferdinand also spoke about the importance of cutting out people that weren't good for him at the time. Have a listen.
Probably one of the hardest things to kind of dissect when you're in the midst of a career. All of a sudden, your life goes from being normal-paced to being a whirlwind of invitations, people of the opposite sex. Every door you go to is open for you.
Yeah.
And everything becomes easier in life. And so there isn't anyone really telling you no. And to sit and actually take that all in when it's going so fast is very difficult. It's like being in a washing machine and try and actually dissect the colours from the whites while the washing machine's on. Everyone in their life, there's a moment where there's a decision to be made. And my moment came. So, like you say, Leeds and West Ham, especially the early parts of Leeds, I overindulged in the nightlife, all the finer things that come with being a professional footballer. And the Euros came about. Kevin Keegan was manager, and I didn't get picked. I went away that summer, holiday, and I just vowed, like, this isn't happening again. And I trained that summer. That's when I first ever started training in the summer before I went back to pre-season. So I was training probably for 2 weeks before that on my own. So when I got back into training, I was fitter than everyone else. So all of a sudden, straight away, the manager's going, oh, that November, I got to move to Leeds. After being left out of the team, broke the British transfer record. And then it just continued going, escalating from there. So it's having that moment where you go, right.
So if you're someone that listens to this podcast, Damien, and assumes that successful people already have all the answers, that clip from Rio Ferdinand shows you that just like all of us, whatever walk of life, whatever we're doing, you're working it out as you go along.
Yeah, very much. And I think what was really fascinating in this theme of people having to make decisions and sharing some of their decision criteria with us. So we heard Robin, like you mentioned, and Rio there talking about this idea that once you get to a certain level, it's not just about talent then. It's about the decisions you're making away from the training ground, who you circulate with, who you hang around with, you know, what you say yes to are all really powerful factors. And what's interesting about them is they're prepared to acknowledge they made mistakes before they corrected it, before it became terminal for them.
I think that's one of the most important points, actually, is that one of the things that we've realised through recording all of these is that every single person we've spoken to, they're all very different, they've achieved very different things, but they all have a really comfortable relationship with failure, where they're almost seeking failure, where being in that tiny zone where you're almost certainly going to fail is the only way they've actually achieved everything they have. And they're totally and utterly comfortable with messing it up.
Yeah, and I remember many years ago hearing Sir Richard Branson talk about this, and it's a very American phrase that there's no failure, there's only feedback. And it's easy to misinterpret that and assume that people are deluded in it, but it's not the fact that they deny the failure, it's the fact that they are prepared to go and excavate the failures and work out why it happened, how it happened, and just as importantly, how they stop it happening again. So therefore, they don't regard it as terminal. They regard it as just a learning lesson that makes them smarter and better.
Okay, right, Damien, I'm enjoying this. What should we do next?
What about talk about our visit to go and visit Mauricio Pochettino?
Yes. Now, this I like because was he the only person whose house we went to? I think he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. So I was telling my wife after I'd come back that I don't think I've ever been to a house where it's taken me 2 minutes to walk up a driveway.
It's brilliant. What What really sort of got me was that while we were getting ready to record the podcast, he wasn't just disappeared off in another part of his house and then, you know, one of his assistants or someone comes and gets you. He was straight in there, wasn't he? Right, sit down. And I noticed, you know, as we spoke in the podcast, he spoke about, I like to touch my players, shake their hands, hold them and feel them. When we walked in, he kind of put, and I've obviously met him a few times, but he put his arm around me for an uncomfortably long amount of time. I mean, it wasn't uncomfortable, but, you know, because we're quite reserved and British, I'm thinking, oh, his arm has been on me for at least a minute. And it's only then when the podcast starts and he starts talking about, oh, I read the energy from someone by being connected to them, that kind of made sense. I thought he was so spiritual.
Yeah, it did. I thought there was something really quite humbling about being in his company, you know, just how open and how welcoming he was. I think there's something quite significant when somebody lets you over the threshold of their own personal space. And I think the fact that he did so willingly speaks an awful lot about the person that he is.
It was a really interesting podcast. What clip have you picked?
I wanted to pick the one where he speaks around trust, because I think that this is one of those unspoken factors that a team is not somebody that works together. A team is a group of people that trust each other. And this was a realization that Mauricio spoke a lot about.
It's so simple because the player want to play and the player want to be the best on the pitch. All they need to feel the confidence and need to feel the trust in the people that is close to you. And when the player understand that you are working for them, it's not about philosophy to play 1-4-4-2 or 1-4-3-3 or play more defensive in a counter-attack or dominate the game. It's about that they feel that you want the best for them.
It's good, this, because no matter how good you are, and I know we've both been watching the Michael Jordan documentary, One Last Dance, it doesn't matter how good you are, you have to trust the people around you. And even in that documentary, they say that he became the great player he is when he learned that the other people are there to help him win.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this is one of those factors that trust is, it's almost an intangible, but you know when it's not there. It's probably more evident when it's not present. So I've met lots of elite coaches that will express sometimes their frustration that they say we'll do team meetings and nobody speaks, or, you know, we'll have suggestion schemes and nobody offers anything. And my answer to those leaders are, the silence is feedback to you. The silence should be deafening you. If people are not speaking up, it's either that they don't feel safe to speak up or they don't trust you, that you'll deal with their questions in a discreet, sensitive manner. So trust is one of those factors that's often more relevant when it's not there. So those like Pochettino that focus on it, or like Michael Jordan in the documentary, are the ones that seem to be tapping into that secret sauce.
And do you think that managers and leaders who don't trust the people around them, those kind of autonomous figures that rule the roost and control every single tiny part of a team or an organisation, are kind of on the way out? That is the old school way of running a team and being successful. These days it's about taking people along for the ride.
Yeah, very much. I think, especially for like in the Premier League managers that we've met, I just think that the nature of the industry means it's too big for anyone to be an autocrat in that particular context. But I think this new breed of managers are recognising that their job is to create leaders, whether this is leaders in the dressing room or leaders amongst their own backroom staff. That's just as important in terms of developing and sustaining winning cultures.
Now, if you haven't listened to the episode, get on it, because Mauricio spoke about all kinds of great things. He spoke about the importance of a strong team as well as the importance of trust. And I now want to play a clip from Stephen Bartlett, who is a guy who a few years ago was stealing frozen pizzas just to feed himself. And now he's set up Social Chain, which is worth hundreds of millions of pounds. He has his own brilliant podcast. He's an amazing entrepreneur, full of energy, full of belief and confidence, and I was desperate to get him on the podcast. I was delighted when he said yes, and this is what he had to say about the importance of building a strong team.
Probably the most important thing about working with Social Chain is, and this is what I hear the managers say, oh, they're a real Social Chain person. And what they mean by that is, like, they're a nice human being. They're not manipulative, they're not in it for themselves. They're a kind, nice human being. And it doesn't take long in an environment of nice human beings where the nice human beings are doing the hiring for someone to stand out as not a nice human being. I hate everything, and I will not allow anything which is like, if you put a post-it note on the fridge saying, who stole my milk? Or if you post into a group chat, social chain saying, who's taken my pencil? This is like, this is my kryptonite. And everybody knows this. So there's none of that. It's the reframing of what that moment was. You know, someone took your pencil because they were doing work for the company, right? They're not selling it on eBay or trying to stab your family with it. You know, so that kind of compassion and that empathy and that kindness is the foundation of this environment. And then from that, if it's a nice place to be, you can trust people. And you don't need to give them a shit if they're 10 minutes late for work or an hour late for work. You can trust because you know that they like being here. And that's kind of the way that I made it, probably because I couldn't work anywhere. And so obviously when I'm constructing a business, it's I need to build somewhere where Steve Bartlett would work. You can't tell anybody to work hard. That doesn't seem like a good approach to take. But there's a culture of trust and hard work and getting the work done.
I really enjoyed hearing from him about building cultures because, you know, I've had a go doing that myself in my own business, and it's taken a long time and it's not an easy thing to get right. And what I really liked about spending time with Stephen is the absolute rock solid belief in what he's doing. And I think that positive people, whether you like what they're doing or not, if they believe in it, I think that can be so encouraging and empowering. And I think people want to go along for the ride, don't they, with positive people.
Oh, massively. I think in this sort of lockdown period that we're going through now, I think we'll start to see the benefits of people that have that kind of optimism. Now, I'm often conscious when people talk about positivity, it's an easy label to give people that's easy to sort of mock and laugh at, the idea that everything is amazing. But I think optimism, which is what you're describing and what Stephen embodied, is this idea that knowing that, you know what, shit does happen, but it will get better. I think, you know, we will come through this stronger and more resourceful for it. And I think there was a study done at Cambridge University in the early 90s, Jake, where they found that you can predict the length and depth of a recession simply by tracking the amount of times we're told by the media that we're in a recession. And I think that idea of being able to create your own narrative of saying we'll get better, we're going to come through this, things will improve, is infectious. People do want to be around that.
Interesting.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Winning is an everyday mindset. On the Ways to Win podcast, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. You'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Today's show is brought to you by Mint Mobile. You know, my favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. You know, that feeling of just decluttering your life and you think, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. Like, how have I been affording that? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan, go to mintmobile.com/HPP. That's mintmobile.com/HPP. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/HPP. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gig on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I was fascinated by Stephen's own story as a kid growing up in Plymouth. You know, he spoke to us about his mum being a serial entrepreneur that kept trying and failing and led the family to become bankrupt. And then he spoke about his own struggles with informal education. And this is a guy that's obviously, as we found, incredibly intelligent. So my question to him was a take on the, not how clever are you, but how are you clever? I thought the answer that he gave us was intriguing.
How am I clever? Hard question. Not good at math, not good at English, not really good at anything as it relates to school. My grades were so bad that I forged the grade certificate. So that's probably the my dad's just found that out. But the certificate I gave him was forged. Wow. Because my brothers are all straight A's, so I yep. felt bad. I think I have always believed that I could. And that, as a force for learning new things and making yourself seem smart, is remarkable. That as a force for achieving things and putting yourselves in situations that you're not qualified to be in is unbelievable. So if there was one thing I'd say, it's that I always believed I could, even when there was no reason for me to believe such a thing.
That is probably my favourite clip of the whole series. Just that line, I always believed I could. Because I think that, like, even if you can't, right, what is the point thinking that? Like, life is hard enough, okay? And sometimes I look at my kids and I think, oh, you know, life is there to kick you in the balls at every touch and turn, right? So why would you do that to yourself? You might as well think, do you know what? I'm brilliant. I'm amazing. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to live an amazing life. I'm going to set up my own business. I'm going to do everything I really want to do, because I cannot see one tiny benefit. And you might correct me here, Damien. I can't see one tiny benefit of thinking anything other than that.
Well, the Australian cricket team in the 1990s used to talk about mental disintegration of their opponents, and they'd sort of speed the process by sledging anyone they were coming up against and telling them how useless they were and things like that. And they saw it as a badge of honour. But I think your point's right. How often do we sledge ourselves by talking ourselves down before we even set off? So I think sometimes being realistic can be hugely advantageous. But that's where I think that optimism of being able to, you know, face reality, but then assume that things will get better is hugely powerful, which is what you're describing, that infectious nature of you in the world.
It reminds me of that lovely quote, Damien, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
100%. That's the words of Henry Ford.
Ah, I love it. Right. Some people had some really good little snippets of advice for us. If you get a chance, please listen to the Tracy Neville podcast. Timekeeping was one of her things, but she was just so interesting, so honest, and she opened up to us in a way that really made the podcast special. Holly Tucker also joined us as well. Now, Holly set up notonthehighstreet.com. You've probably bought something from there. Most people have. And she came out with quite a quote. Have a listen.
So my funny motto in life is it's better to have a hole than an arsehole, which basically means that when you're an entrepreneur in a small business, you just can't handle it anymore. So you're just going to hire someone. And I'm telling you now, however big your business is, the bigger the business and the higher that person is up there, get the wrong person and it will take your business back 1 year.
Now, the challenge, of course, is knowing whether they're the right or the wrong person, Damien.
Yeah, but I think, again, this is a big theme that's come through all of, especially our leaders on this series, has been the role of what we call cultural architects. These are the leaders without title, people that just identify with what you're trying to do and support you in your quest to achieve it. And I think Holly spoke about that in that great line, it's better to have a hole than an arsehole, is that you don't want a cultural assassin, somebody that's just undermining things behind you. It's better to have a gap if you can't have an architect.
And there was also lots of advice from all of our guests about how you create a team with the right people around you. And one of the things that people often do, Damien, is they put little tripwires in, and then they see how people react to those tripwires before they've even been offered a job, before they're even part of the team. And the reaction to the problem tells them an awful lot more than just sitting in an interview and asking a mundane question, which everyone's been through.
Yeah, I love the idea of a tripwire. One of my favourite ones was Walt Disney used to take any aspiring new member of his team for a meal, and he used to really watch closely whether they put salt and pepper on it before they tasted it. And if they did, they weren't getting the job, however impressive they were at the interview, because he saw that as a sign of being close-minded, that you weren't even prepared to try the food before you just went into your old habits of flavouring it. And I think you can see that this idea of just setting people up to find out what they're going to behave like when nobody is watching is incredibly powerful.
Before we listen to our last couple of clips, they're on the subject of trauma creating triumph. And this is something that is discussed and analysed and researched a great deal, isn't it?
Yeah, this has been, there was a fascinating study done by UK Sport on this topic about whether their high performers had suffered a trauma. And there was a high percentage of elite performers that had had some kind of trauma, whether it was a parent separating, a death in a family. And again, this was a really interesting thing to explore with our guests of how they had dealt with life-changing events and been able to overcome it.
Okay, let's have a listen to Dylan Hartley and Kelly Holmes on exactly that topic.
I had this conversation with my wife the other day. I was like, so when you have kids, you want them to have a really nice world. But I was thinking, because I talk about my career and why I think it's kind of forged me who I am, it's because I'd struggle. You know, I didn't have money at a young age, you know, when my academy counterparts did. So I found a way to make money, and I found a way to train harder, to earn more. And that's the thing. I was thinking, my daughter, and I've got another one on the way. How do you create struggle for your kids without making them struggle?
So I think then I took that into secondary school, where I just felt useless all the time. I was outside the classroom. I felt like I'm just a failure. No one give a shit, because I was just like, you know, just the girl with no name, until athletics took its hold, you know, and then suddenly I'm winning everything. You know, my PE teacher's saying, like, if you're going to be good, if you want to be good, you've got to start focusing and believing you can be good, because you're better than all of these at this. You might be outside the classroom and, you know, you've got to sort that out, but you're better than everybody here. And I was just like, oh my God, somebody's actually told me I can be good.
This is one of the things that we enjoyed talking about on the podcast, Damien, wasn't it? Fault versus responsibility. You know, it's not necessarily the fault of Kelly Holmes or Dylan Hartley or anyone listening to this, the kinds of things that they've been through. No matter how harrowing and difficult they are, it's still their responsibility to deal with those things, turn them around and make them a success. I've lost count of the number of times I've had a conversation with someone and they've said, yeah, but I can't achieve what I really want because this happened. Well, that wasn't your fault, but it's still your responsibility to do with your life what you really want.
Yeah, and again, I think just the ability to cut through that noise and hold their hands up was something that was a theme with pretty much all of them. And again, I think it comes back to the Robin Van Persie clip we listened to right at the start in terms of what he was trying to tell his son when you asked why did it resonate. I think it was those words that you've described, fault versus responsibility. It's a hallmark of all these elite performers we've been lucky enough to chat with.
And as hard as it is, you know, Dylan made the point that actually he wouldn't change it because it made him the person that he was. And I think that there's a lot to say for that, actually.
Yeah, very much. I mean, his story was fascinating, wasn't it, when he spoke about coming over to England away from his parents at 15 and forging a life for himself here, where he would only phone them once a week because of telephone connections and things like that. And this was a guy that learned in possibly one of the most brutal ways about that distinction between fault and responsibility. And I know he's got a reputation for his 2 years' worth of suspensions that he accrued during his playing. But when we spoke to him, you could really understand why he had ultimately prevailed in his career.
Oh, it's been so good just to sit and look back on the things we've done. I mean, it's a reminder of all the very, very different, varied conversations that we had, but ultimately all of them with a very similar message. I think that's what was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that when we've been reflecting on it after each of the discussions, I think we've started to spot that there are a series of common themes that come across, this idea of being clear about your behaviours, the emotional intelligence, this distinction between fault and responsibility, the power of belief and trust. It's been really, really eye-opening and a real privilege that I think somebody was asking me the question, what I found around it. And I think what really summed it up for me was how normal all these elite performers were. And I think that's the final secret ingredient of them, that they don't get carried away with the outcome of what they've achieved. They're able to articulate their achievements and understand it and be able to share that with us.
And what I didn't want people to do was listen to the podcast and just feel like it was us celebrating greatness, right? Because these people have had amazing careers. They've been lauded and celebrated for many years. There's no point in us doing more of that. I wanted anyone, regardless of job, status, age, ability, to listen to it and to feel inspired by it. And actually, one of the biggest positives for me is the number of messages I've had coming through on either Instagram or Twitter, you know, direct messages and mentions, just telling me that I listened to this or that episode and it's fundamentally changed the way that I do things and I finally decided to go and achieve something I've always wanted to do. And that is the single most pleasing thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's humbling in the extreme that people have been generous enough to give us an hour of their time every week. But then, like you say, the reason we both did this was we wanted to feel that it could make a difference for people that were going to listen. So if people are doing that, that's a real delight.
Yeah. I suppose the most important question of all, will you come back for series two?
I'd love to. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's a relief because we've already got some big names lined up for it. Listen, mate, it's so good for me to sit and do this alongside you. I was so desperate to make sure that there was someone who, you know, has spent their life studying, researching and learning everything there is to know about elite performers and sporting cultures. And I think you've brought so much to the podcast. So on a personal note, thank you so much for agreeing to be involved.
Oh, no. Well, thank you, Jake. And thank you for asking me. It's been a real treat to work with you. And I'm really grateful for your faith and trust as well.
Good man. I just want to shout out all of the team at YMNU who helped to create the podcast, everyone at Rethink Audio who've worked so hard to get it going, Matt Hill who's been really helpful and brilliant as well, obviously all of our guests and everyone that's listened and taken the time to share their thoughts with us. It has been greater than we could have ever imagined, this first series, and as we both said, we're going to do it again. Series 2 is on its way. We've got some great names lined up and we look forward to you joining us for that as well. But from all of us on the High Performance Podcast, we are officially signing off from Series 1. We'll see you very soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.